go. 5, 4, 3, 2. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Deadlancer.com's world-famous Splattercast, episode number 219 in Lincoln, Nebraska. My name is Jeff. Also in Lincoln is Matt.
Howdy, howdy.
And Steve.
Yeah.
And in Denver, Colorado is DJ.
How's it going, guys?
Going fine. Kind of feels like it's been a little bit, doesn't it? I mean, because we had the Splat Academy, and that, there's a lot of production work there, so that's not doesn't have the same feel as like getting together Monday to do a live recording. So it feels
all,
like it's been a couple weeks.
We're all just we're still pretty spent.
I missed you guys.
Yeah,
I missed you guys.
the main topic tonight is a movie that is sort of it's a curious film. It's a film that's remarkable for a number of reasons. Maybe outside of you know its own quality in and of itself.
It was created by Penthouse.
Yeah, the famous Caligula starring Malcolm McDowell, and you know there's a whole bunch of fun facts behind the scenes of that movie, and Matt'll lead us through a discussion of that because it's sort of I mean would you call this a favorite of yours, Matt? I mean is favorite the right word to use? Or?
No, favorite's not the right word. I like it. Unlike you guys who apparently hated this movie, I actually like
you
it.
Find
I think,
it,
I think
find
there's
it
some
interesting.
Worth
I mean, yeah,
yeah, yeah. I don't think it's a great movie by any means, but I like it.
So we'll be talking about – I mean it was new to me. I hadn't seen this before. I sort of knew of it. But so we'll talk about that later on. We got a ton of stuff and just you know odds and ends to talk about before we get there. Icebreaker question. I have two. I have one that's very innocuous and I have one that's very strange, I guess, maybe challenging. First thing I did this morning was I got up and I went to the dentist because I needed to have a filling. And it happens sometimes. I mean I try to take care of my teeth but I needed a filling. One thing I need to do a better job of is flossing. Do you guys floss, Steve?
Yes.
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 Yeah. I managed to do it a few times. I forget to do it every day, so I find it very challenging to keep up with the flossing regimen. All right. So everyone here
swallowed a couple of my fillings, though. You know, every time I put one in, it like it breaks off and goes down my throat. And
you
then
put
I
in your own fillings?
Yeah.
You just use They use like this weird ceramic-y, plasticky crap now.
Resin,
and it lasts like 6 months, and then I swallow it. And
that's too bad.
You know, like I go back, and they're like, "Well, you don't have a cap on this." I'm like, "Well, eat a dick, you dick. You should have done a good job."
Yeah, I'm sure you tell that to the dentist, and then Corbin Burnson puts you in the chair and cut you up. All right. Now, the other icebreaker question this week, this came out of the IRC, as so many things do these days. You know, you never know what we're going to be talking about in there. It's deadlantern.com/chat. You can find all the information you need to visit us on IRC. I think speaking about Caligula, there's a scene in particular in Caligula where a fisting takes place. And one of the actor in question was like, well, I think the script called for him to anally penetrate a guy with his penis. The guy was like, "No, I don't want to do this." I think the quote was like, "I won't do buggery, but I'll do a fisting."
Yeah, so that would be Malcolm McDowell who said that.
Right, right. And so the question here is about the lines we draw for ourselves. What if you were transported back into Roman times and you find yourself face to face with Caligula himself, and he says to you, "Okay, we're going to do one of two things here. I'm either going to fist you, or I'm going to bugger you." With my penis.
You know, if he says bugger right out of the chute, I would be laughing because that's such a
well, I'm trying to, I mean, it's pretty far out there premise, but I'm trying to be delicate with my language choices, DJ. I mean, you get what I'm describing, right?
Bugger? Really?
Right. So that's the choice you have to make. I will say here's the twist.
You're gonna poke
it's
him
not
in
a
bubble.
Twist, but here's the qualification. The man's penis is presumably much smaller and more ergonomically shaped for this particular task than you are most certainly going to be far less uncomfortable and or in pain and there's going to be far less risk of ongoing damage to your internals from his penis versus his fist.
We're reaching a new low here, guys.
This is weird because Jeff just brought this up in the chat room and it was very strange. I wouldn't expect this from Jeff.
Yeah. So which do you choose? I mean,
he's been thinking a lot about it, apparently.
Well, I haven't been thinking a lot about it, I don't think. But I think, so DJ, which would you choose? Would you rather be fisted by a guy or have him use his wiener for the same thing?
You know, I don't think I've probably given birth to things the size of a fist before. So, you know, either way, it probably wouldn't really matter. But, you know, I guess I could see it's kind of gay if it's a wiener. but it,
well, see, yeah, DJ, it's DJ not- hits on the question right away, isn't it? Doesn't he? So DJ is choosing Fist. Steve, how about you?
Well, you know, I mean, you know, 70s era Malcolm McDowell, you know, he's a pretty good looking guy. I guess it would depend on whether or not I'm going to get, you know, the reach around if he's, you know, doing it
with
this.
There's nothing in it for you. It's just, you know.
There's nothing in it for me except bragging rights.
Yeah.
I don't know. You'll have to come back to me on this one.
Yes. Oh, don't push. None of us want to answer. I mean, I guess I'll go out on a limb. I'll go out on a limb and be the guy to say, well, I mean, for the sake of my internal organs and everything else, I'll take the wiener of Caligula. Matt, how about you?
I'll use that.
Yeah. I don't think this is
a guy. I trust him to be gentle.
I don't even think it really matters that much, really.
Yeah, really.
I mean, you're gay either way, right?
Right.
Only so if you kiss, according to our Xbox Live player.
Yeah, according to that guy. So we hit on what we've learned here is that DJ is obviously a hate-filled homophobe who just finds gay men disgusting. Obviously. I mean, that's the only reason that you choose Fist in this, right? It's because you're uncomfortable about yourself, or you know, you have this hate in you. That's
actually it's more to do with the fact that, you know, if someone blows his load up your butt, you're probably going to get AIDS and die. And so
I don't think there was AIDS in ancient Rome, DJ.
So.
Yeah, there probably was. How do you think that guy from Queen
all syphilis have AIDS?
So there you go. That's the icebreaker question. I feel like we live
in ancient Rome, dude.
I feel like we've regressed. I think that everything about
cross the new frontier.
Yeah. So moving on with house cleaning items. Now, Matt, I remember, I don't know how long I've had Twitter. I'm not very active on the Twitter, but I do have Twitter. I have twitter.com/deadlantern. That's my handle. And I don't really tweet about much. I'm like, oh, I went to play Magic the Gathering. Oh, I went to see Drive Angry. It was good. Stuff like that. I don't get into too many in-depth tweets, but I do enjoy it. I think it's fun. And I like looking at other people's more than I enjoy doing it myself, I guess. But anyway, I remember when it came out, Matt was pretty skeptical. And I agree, you know, it's fair to say that Twitter's pretty silly. But Matt was very skeptical. He's like, I'm not getting involved in this. Matt, where can people follow you on Twitter?
Yes, and I've always been a huge critic of Twitter. I still think it's stupid, absolutely stupid. My position on Twitter has not changed, especially
sure.
Now that I've used it a little bit. I still think it's absolutely ridiculous. But
you can't
but I do recognize
that's where people are.
Yes, I do, and this actually was brought to my attention. I first started thinking about this when the Splatcademy Awards, when we first brought the voting up. You can go to Twitter's website, just, you know, typed in Splatcademy when it first posted up, and just tons and tons of people were tweeting about it. And so we got lots and lots of people that came to the site. And even though I have this horrible aversion to this stupid Twitter crap, which I still think it is, I can't deny, you know, there's no reason that I can't do anything about this. So this is a culture phenomenon. This is where everyone's at. I might as well help promote the Splattercast, now Outpost Doom with it. That's Twitter/Splattercast. You can follow me there. I won't update often, but you can find Splattercast stuff there as well. And feel free to call me a hypocrite. That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's perfectly valid in this day and age to like recognize that, or you know, identify something as something that you don't personally care for, but that there is some value to it to other people, and you want to meet people on their own terms sometimes. And
yeah,
I think it's perfectly fine. I get it. Now moving on, I have a line here that says Parish Expert Run with Brian and Ronan. Now this must be pretty epic. Tell me a little bit about it.
Steve,
I remember way back
this.
In the day. I remember way back in the day when Left 4 Dead 1 first came out. We were all sort of getting into it at the same time, and I know you guys had some run that took you like all night, like a literal all nighter.
Dead Air was 10 hours.
Yeah, is this a repeat of that? Tell me
this
story.
This wasn't quite. This wasn't Dead Air level. It was about 6 hours. But Ronan, Matt, and I started a Parish.
It was eight, Steve. Eight hours.
It was eight.
Yeah,
because no,
that's
what. All right, well, for the purpose of this, we'll call it eight, even though Matt's kind of lying.
We started at 10, and we ended at 6 in the morning.
Yeah, but we weren't still playing the Parish at 6 in the morning.
Shut your mouth. It was 8 hours.
Okay, so this epic 8 hours Parish run, Matt, Ronan, and I started this at 10:30 at night on Saturday night, and finished it about 6 a.m. on Sunday. We started out the first three levels, which are usually just mind-numbingly insane, annoying. We took down in about 30 minutes. The other seven and a half hours were spent on the last two maps of this campaign.
Wow.
So
now,
the deal
this is
was
the, campaign with the bridge, right?
Yes, the bridge is the finale. Ronan and I both needed to get across and survive to get whatever the achievement point, which we found out later I didn't even need because I already had it, and apparently I just forgot about it. But we did it anyway. So, I mean, the highlight of the night is most people who know Ronan, he's a pretty laid-back guy. Mm-hmm. Once he gets angry, he gets the shit out, he gripes a little bit, he is done. He was pissed off at a level that I don't think anyone has ever seen before. He wanted to fucking murder us during this.
Oh, yeah. We were giving him so much shit.
it was so horrible. Shit. But every time something went wrong, it was always him. It's like he's the one who got killed when everybody else made it across. He's the one that accidentally shotgunned someone in the back when they were about to make a cross.
And just went randomly on for hours like this.
He did. For like 6 hours, he was apparently on the side of the zombies, unbeknownst to himself.
Sometimes you get on tilt.
Yeah, but he was, he was just fucking angry. He wouldn't talk to us.
Well, that's what it says on Xbox Live.
There was one point in time when he was making the run, and he starts screaming, "I can't move, I'm stuck on something."
I'm
and he's just
stuck.
Yelling out. He's like, "I'm fucking stuck," and we're laughing, of course, and all of a sudden I hear this, "Ah," and it goes, there's a static, and it just goes click, and there was just silence for like 15 minutes.
He might have shot himself for all you know.
but that was pretty epic.
But you ended up, all's well that ends well. You finished the map.
The highlight is, the Parish Bridge run on Expert is so fucking difficult. All you can do is just make a break for it and hope you succeed. And, we were getting, like, myself and Matt across, or just Matt, or just me and no one else. Finally, 6 a.m., eight hours into the run, just all of the angels start singing and all the planets align. And all four of us, myself, Ronan, Matt, joined by Brian from Drunken Zombie, we all four make it across, and there's just singing.
On green
up
health,
heaven.
No less.
On green. I don't think we got touched.
No, we got touched because we had to heal in the back of that truck before we ran past that tank.
Let's not talk about things that we do in the backs of trucks.
Well, that's pretty fun. I think it's cool that these games provide the
platform. You weren't there, you suck.
The platform for you guys to have these fun experiences that you're talking about for days and weeks after the fact. That's really cool. I certainly like playing the game. Oh, speaking of Xbox, everyone send me sympathy because my Xbox got the dreaded 3 red rings, so it's dead. It's in Texas right now in the Xbox repair shop getting fixed, so hopefully I get it back soon. Pretty bummed, but what are you going to do? I was still under warranty. That's the silver lining. Now moving on.
I can fix it with pennies and electrical tape.
Yeah, well, if it breaks again, I'll call on Steve with the pennies and the tape. But now I'll send it to the certified people at the Microsoft Xbox repair shop in Texas. Moving on. It was grinding, off my rhythm so much. Right. Hey, what's John Tenney's Realm of the Weird at realmofthe.com?
Okay, I actually met John Tenney via Facebook, and he actually is one of the cast members of a show called Paranormal State, the new class. I've actually never seen these, but I guess they're sort of like a ghost hunter type thing. They go into these various supposedly haunted places, and one of the millions of TV shows about that kind of stuff. They're very popular. Anyway, he's going to be at Days of the Dead convention, which we are going to be attending in July 1st through the 3rd, and he's going to be there, and he actually was saying, hey, well, I've been a long-time podcaster. He actually has a podcast called Realm of the Weird, where he actually... as he basically does stories about sort of like real life paranormal events that have taken place. And so it's sort of like an audio podcast about those specific incidents. And it's pretty cool. Check it out, realmoftheweird.com. Told him I'd give him a shout out. So go check that out if you're interested in paranormal stuff.
Yeah, cool. Sounds great. Everyone check out realmoftheweird.com. Now moving into the wacky news portion of the show. Steve, what's this about the world ending on May 21st?
Well, there's a – I don't know the exact name of this group. The guy who organized this runs some website called Family Radio, and it's a Christian group. And
maybe I have heard of this.
Yeah, I mentioned it not on the cast, but I first saw it a month or so ago.
Uh-huh.
And it's these guys who say that the 2012 date that everyone's citing is wrong and that the world's really going to end on May 21st. They say they studied the Bible and that all of the – all of the numbers line up. May 21st, 2011 is when the world's going to end.
Mm.
And when I first heard about this, the guys gave themselves a built-in out. They're quoted as saying that if we're still here on May 22nd, it means that we just weren't saved. So they're saying the world's going to end on May 21st, but it's still going to be here. It's weird.
That is real
strange. That's all I heard about for until today. I was on CNN, and they had an article about it again and like other previous end of the world predictions, and now they've updated it. This guy is saying, well, for one, he also predicted the end of the world in 1994, and you know we're still here. So he's 0-1.
I don't think if you got it wrong once, I don't think you get.
Yeah, he's 0-1 lifetime on this, but he's predicting it again May 21st this year. But now there's no longer an out. He's saying that May 21st will be the rapture, so everyone that God likes will be saved, and after that there will be 150 days of death. And, you know, dismemberment for everyone left, and the world will actually end in October sometime. But that's not the best part. The best part is on May 21st, after the rapture, he's predicting earthquakes followed by the dead rising from the graves. So you've heard it. Fucking zombies. May 22nd, it's going to be left for dead for fucking real on Earth. Zombies. Okay. So this is a end-of-the-world prophecy that I can fucking get behind.
Well, I'm glad that that Ronan lives in Tennessee, because then he probably won't be able to shoot us.
wasn't funny.
That failed.
It's kind of – because I mean, no one takes these people serious except for themselves. But it's kind of sad, because there's all sorts of stories on CNN now about these people who follow this guy. They've just hopped in these caravans of minivans, and they're just driving around the country, you know, preaching to the world. So there are stories about these people just – up and quit their jobs, left their family behind, left all their shit in their house, and
that's pretty irresponsible.
They think, you know, why do I need it? The world's going to end. So, I mean, May 22nd, when they're still here, just like the rest of the world's going to be, they're going to go back and they're not going to have anything.
That's going to be messed up. Maybe if like a guy needed a good used car, this would be an opportunity to get one for real cheap off of these guys because they're going to feel like.
Yeah. There are stories. These people just left their houses unlocked, and now all their shit's been looted.
Sweet. We need to find these guys. Like, get a sweet new TV or whatever.
If these guys are wrong, they're idiots. If they're right, May 22nd, zombies.
Chances are, guys, people like this aren't going to have good stuff. These are going to have abandoned babies and like Star Trek action figures and like a bunch of uneaten crappy
ho-ho. Here's the question. If you look at the count, you've read this story, you saw a couple news items, you have the date May 21st is floating around in your head. If you happen to take note of the date when May 21st is here, do you look around? Do you pause for a second and look around and think about it? Not in a doubting way, like could those people really be right? But maybe that's what I mean.
Like if you walk outside and there's nobody and there's just cars in the streets, empty cars in the middle of the street.
And you're like, oh, shit.
I should have believed in Jesus.
let's all touch base with each other on May 21st.
Wouldn't that instantly make you a believer, though?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's one of the big questions you can't help but have. You know, why don't these supernatural things that I believe in, why don't they just manifest themselves and show everyone that they're real? Yeah, totally.
Well, another question is, I mean, I'm not going to take a crap on religious people, but what do these super hardcore people like this who have a 100% concrete date, what do they do the next day when they discover they're wrong?
Yeah, I don't know about that because this has happened before.
Right.
This happens a lot in history.
Yeah. But this is the first big one that's occurred in our lifetime, really.
Yeah, and in recent time. It's definitely been in the news. So
didn't the Hale-Bopp people, the cult, think that the world was coming to an end or something?
Yeah,
or the aliens were going to take them? Or, I don't know.
Yeah.
But they had a good out, though, is because they thought that they were going to –
They put their money where their mouth was, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. They killed themselves, so then they don't have to worry about being wrong because it's right for them.
Hey, May 21st, Dead Lantern Into the World Party. Let's do it.
Yeah, sounds all right. Sounds all right. Now moving on to other stories in the news. Steve, there was this it was a trailer for a video game, but in the execution, it's much more like just a short film that was kind of cool. stylized. It's this game called Dead Island coming out. It's a zombie video game, of which there are a few of those already. But there was a lot of buzz about this short film and sort of what it centers on and what the set piece is and whatnot. So, Steve, what's the deal with this Dead Island thing? What's the controversy, I guess, of sorts?
Well, the Dead Island trailer opens. It's a trailer played in reverse, and it opens with this dead girl on the ground. And as the trailer plays backwards, you see that she was bitten by a zombie, turned into a zombie, attacked her dad, and her dad throws her out the window, to which she presumably dies finally when she hits the ground. And there's another article on CNN, a home apparently of where I get all of my news.
Yeah,
but there's this guy. This is a blogger. I don't know if it's a guy who's really super affiliated with CNN, but basically, I won't go through all this, but he's making a point that it's sort of along the lines of what's wrong with us as a people when we've suddenly made it okay to kill kids in these games or whatnot. What does it say about us that we can watch this, that we can support a game that shows kids dying? And he goes on to show that in many recent video games and movies, like, kids are being put in the crossfire like more and more and more. And so he's kind of, I mean, it's sort of along the lines of, do video games and movies make people violent? Well, he's saying here, do movies and games where kids die a lot make us, I guess, desensitized to children dying? So I was going to see what you guys think about this. Do you guys think that, I'm pretty sure I know all of our opinions, but does this guy have any backing whatsoever? Do you really think that if you play a game where a kid dies, you're going to see a kid die in real life and go, eh?
I think he's, I don't know. I
don't think that's what he's saying.
I think he's lamenting the fact that, like, this is what we need to in our sort of hard art content nowadays, I guess, is.
Well, Matt, what's your take on this?
I think what, like, and I posted an entry about this on deadlander.com with a link to this guy's article. It actually says on the bottom that he's not affiliated with CNN. He just works as sort of like a freelance social commentator for them and whatnot.
Okay.
But
this guy is Ted Turner's specific voice and everything. Stands for CNN.
But basically what he – when I read it, it seemed to me that he was basically just – he wasn't being super heavily critical of the game – because he admitted, yeah, he played BioShock, and you can kill little girls.
He mentions Heavy
BioShock.
Rain and Dead Space.
Well, I don't think he was on the super hardcore. People who play this are bad people.
Yeah, I think he's basically just saying, why as a culture are we sort of becoming accepting of these kind of images? And that's a valid question to ask. It's like, why do we need to see a little kid get murdered brutally, or why in our culture, our media and whatnot, why do kids get to play games where they murder other kids and stuff like that? The question is just, do we need that in our society? Like, what is beneficial about those kind of images? And I think he's making the comment that everyone was like, oh, wow, it's so cool. Because, of course, and we've said on this podcast, it's cool when kids die in horror movies. It's rare, sure. And we like it when kids die. The question is why? Like, what makes that neat? And why do we think it's neat?
I think it's the element of Fallout is a video game that we all, I think, liked a whole lot. But it's this open world game where you can roam around and do all these different things with all these vibrant different characters. But there's kids walking around the game and you can't just shoot them. You can shoot pretty much any adult in the game.
Unless you have the mod on the PC.
Yeah, do whatever. But I think that when we talk about in a video game or in a movie or whatever, and they kill a kid, and why do we think that's quote-unquote cool, I think it's just it's a step they can take to show you that all bets are off and no one's really safe in this movie. And like you're watching Friday the 13th Part 6 or whatever, and Jason comes storming through the cabin with all the sleeping kids, and you're like, well, okay, I know nothing's going to happen now. And the movie is unable to surprise you there because you know nothing's going to happen now. In a situation where some work of fiction, a video game or a movie where they do that, you're like, sometimes they take you by surprise and you're like, okay, wow, this is a different world than maybe I thought I was going to be in for the duration of this piece of fiction.
So, yeah, game or movie, even if it's non-horror, where there is some sort of global catastrophe. Kids are dying. If you think about
sure.
it for more than 3 seconds, but is it just explicitly showing it so much worse? Like,
right.
Take Independence Day, not a horror movie. All of these cities are just getting fucking nuked. I mean, to not think of kids dying, do you have to accept that, all right, this clearly takes place in a world where human beings are born 18 years old. There are no babies. No babies died in this scene.
Well, the ridiculous thing about this whole controversy that this is a zombie kid is, has this guy never seen the original Night of the Living Dead?
Yeah, that's one of the things that happens, you know, down in the basement.
Once again, George Romero already did this. This is ground that's already been covered. I think what's really ironic about this whole debate that arose out after this trailer is I was actually reading a site about with a dude who actually got to play 15 minutes of this game, and it is not a serious game at all. It's absolutely
ridiculous.
It's over
the
top. It's just – it's absurd. It's played for comedic laughs, and – that's what's funny about this is I was like, oh, wow, because that's what got people interested in the game in the first place because the trailer is really well done. It looks cool. And if I had a little zombie kid that was trying to bite me, I'd throw it out of a window too. so come on. But the game itself is apparently just one giant laugh track. It's just absurd to the extreme.
There's one statement at the bottom of this article here, and he says, perhaps there are some people who like the queasy feeling of taking down kid-sized zombies. Is he making some kind of like moral judgment on people who are going to play this game and like killing the kid?
If you're going to play BioShock, if you're playing BioShock and you have the choice, and I know DJ's played BioShock, you have the choice to either save the little sister or to basically kill her. What did you do, DJ? What did you do when you played BioShock? Did you save him or did you kill him?
Well, the first time I went through, I saved them all. But the second time I went through it, I murdered every child and became evil and tormented, and I kind of had a good time.
And Jeff, did you ever play BioShock?
Yeah, I played the first one. I saved all the little sisters.
Okay, and see, I saved all of them too. Actually, that's not true. I think I accidentally killed the first one. I hit the wrong button, so I didn't get the stupid achievement at the end of the game.
I got it.
I was pissed. Yeah, I didn't get it, but I saved all of them, and that's just usually my habit in all these games. Even these big, major, like open world sandbox games, like Fallout 3. I don't play as an evil character. I go through it as a good character as much as I can, and so. I don't know. Some people like to do the death and killing aspect of it. Like, I don't know. I don't think they're going to run out and just murder little kids because of it.
Yeah.
But what does it really matter? If DJ gets enjoyment from killing a virtual little sister, how does that affect anything in real life?
Well, you know, it's actually better if I kill somebody on a video game because then when that kid is screaming behind me, I don't stab him in the face with my banana.
You would have never done that anyway.
I don't like when people say that about video games. I don't like when people say, Grand Theft Auto is great because then I go and shoot the hookers and the cops in Grand Theft Auto, and that's a stress relief. If you're a person who needs stress relief on that level, then I will buy into the fact that you're not a healthy person and you need to get some help. Like if it's your therapy that is stopping you from being violent in real life, then that is a problem.
Yeah, that's a dumb argument for that kind of stuff.
That is a little weird. So
once again, the guy is not like hardcore if you play this or evil, but he raises some points you can read. The article is called "Why I Can't Get Behind Dead Island" on CNN.
I think it's worth thinking about.
And he comes across as like a genuine guy. I mean, he doesn't come across like he's trying to be.
Yeah, he's not on.
Just raising a topic to debate and discuss, and that's perfectly
right.
Fine.
Yeah. So thank you for that. Now we have a few emails and a few FormSpring inbox questions before we move on to some commentary about the Splat Academy Awards and then on to the Caligula talk. Oh, and I'm also going to stick some Nick Cage in the middle of that too. So first up, emails.
I want to hear about Drive Angry.
Explody Joe writes, "Hi gang, just a few words on Splattercast 217. I wanted to throw out. First of all, I love Allie. Please have her on the show more often. I agree, Allie's great. I think we should bring her on just maybe randomly out of the blue and just have her participate in the regular." Show sometimes because she is great fun. And visit her at Ann TJ, of course, at allmonttrash.com. Joe writes, "I wanted to comment a little on your CGI versus practical effects discussion. CGI is one of those divisive issues, sort of like remakes. In a way, I am against it because it feels lazy. But I can see how it can enhance a movie sometimes where you can do things that would just be extremely difficult or impossible. It's hard to think of example of good CGI because if it's good, you shouldn't be able to tell it's CGI. For example, when I watched Peter Jackson's King Kong, on the scene where they were sailing across to the island, Mr. Explody pointed out that the ocean was CGI. At first, I was amazed because I hadn't spotted it at all and thought it was an achievement to digitally create something like that. But then I was disappointed because it felt like part of the magic had disappeared. I'm mostly of the opinion that when it comes to horror, if you need CGI to do it, you shouldn't put it in your film. especially if you can't get it to look good. But if it's kind of an insignificant part of the movie, which would be a real pain in the ass to do practically, I don't see the harm. Also, I think I understand the point Jeff was trying to make about realistic effects versus entertaining effects. A good example is the Nightmare on Elm Street remake. The filmmakers wanted Freddy to look and sound like a real burn victim, and while it might be a more accurate representation of someone who had been burned alive, that's not what those movies are about. While Robert Englund's makeup may be unrealistic, it is much better suited to the tone of the movies than what they did to Jackie Earle Haley. Of course, I prefer practical effects to CGI because they simply have more heart and soul. Trivial though it may be, the CG blood ruined Midnight Meat Train. What's so difficult about chucking corn syrup around? Take it, Sleazy. Explodey Joe. With that final point, I cannot disagree. I hate – I'm not even that anti-CGI, but I hate in a movie where a literal blood spray is done in CG. Why is it so hard to throw fluid around? And it always looks really, really bad and cartoony and like you're sticking a color form on the screen or something. Yeah. Super bad. So,
that
yeah.
was one of the problems with Dream Home I had. I really liked the movie, and then at the very near the end, there's a scene with a gunshot, and it's just so CG and fake. I'm like, man, Tom Savini was doing this like 40 years ago, and it looked amazing. Why can't you just do that?
Yeah, what does a squib cost? Like $3?
Yeah, I don't see. That seems like the simplest thing to do. I mean, I don't know. But anyway.
It's putting an explosive on someone's head.
Yeah, it's having insurance. All the insurance, and then on top of that, you have to have an explosives license. You have to be trained. You have to be certified. Everybody that's on site has to have proper.
All right,
OSHA
so DJ wants CGI and everything. Next.
Oh, and I will point out just one quick thing about the Elm Street remake. I understand what Joe is saying here, but I think when you come at it in terms of what a remake is supposed to be, I think the idea was to not be the old Freddy movies. So I don't know if that comparison works exactly, because I think that the whole idea was to, like, we're going to do something different with Freddy that's never been done before. I think they failed doing that, but that's just my personal opinion. Yeah. But I think that was the point of what they were
trying
to do. There's
another discussion topic for a different cast, but I mean, we'll go over realism versus just over the top craziness. What helps and hurts a horror movie?
Yeah, and I'd still like to see an example of someone who's given me an example of a horror movie with CG in it that has worked. Because I understand King Kong, a lot of these fantasy, big effects spectacles have really good CG, and I absolutely agree that CG can be a great tool for filmmakers to use. I'm not just completely anti CG in anything, but I would like to see an example of someone that can tell me in a horror movie. Point to me a scene that says, okay, this is a great example of CG. Mm-hmm. So I can take a look at it.
Email us at splattercast@deadlander.com with your picks for really great executions of CG in horror films. Next email is from George. He writes, hey, I've been using my drive time to and from work to listen to all the past episodes of the Splattercast. By the way, something I don't typically recommend people do. Those first episodes, rough. Normally, I do not send in comments about episodes that are this old, since they aren't really warranted at this late date. One exception is episode number 153, Breast Cancer Awareness episode for 2009. I want to let everyone involved know that this has to go down and probably the best episode and certainly the most important one. Well, everyone took this seriously with only a few questionable comments from DJ, of course. You guys tried to keep it from being a downer episode. All of the detailed information shows how much you can do your homework when something important is addressed, and it shows how much you really care about your listeners to get this information out there for all to hear. Well, thank you very much for that, George. He says, bravo to all involved with that episode, and hopefully you will do the occasional important message show again. But don't get carried away with it, he puts in parentheses. We don't want to preach at anybody, of course not. As always, I enjoy listening to your show, most of them at least, and hope you have many more episodes in the future. One last note, this year's Splat Academy Award presentation was the best yet. Congratulations, signed George. Thank you very much, George, for the kind words.
Thanks.
Absolutely.
The Breast Cancer Awareness Show was fun. I thought that was a really fun. We actually had Allie on that show. So once again,
there you go.
It goes full circle. Allie was on there.
I think it's great.
It made you feel good because, hey, you know, we were doing something positive. I think we raised some money and whatnot for breast cancer awareness. It was all around good time.
Yeah, we have the freedom in this format to just do stuff like that every once in a while.
What did people get for donating? I can't even remember.
I don't know. They got a color version of Outpost Doom.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Those actually got sent out, right? They're not like the sweet piece.
No, they didn't get sent out. It wasn't a DVD of them. We actually DJ posted on the web,
right.
And we sent the file and they downloaded it via the file. So, and I actually wanted to do another breast cancer awareness episode this past year, but just didn't have any time to get all that put together. So maybe this year we'll do something again.
So
31 lucky donators downloaded a copy of Outpost Doom in color.
Yeah.
So
Well, there you go. That's cool. That's pretty cool. Now moving on, let's clean out the FormSpring inbox before we take care of the Splat Academy Awards and the movie discussion. We have almost a dozen questions here, but we'll try and zip through them. Question number one. It's formspring.me/deadlantern. Sign on and ask us anything. If you were given the chance to see only one of the following films on the big screen, which would you choose? And then the four choices here are The Exorcist, Halloween, The Thing, Evil Dead 2.
Now, Seen it.
In the case of these, these are pretty big films that obviously you're not going to go down there this weekend and see them, but these actually appear on screens every once in a while. I know they have here in town at least a couple of these. So, Matt, I mean, I don't know. Which is your favorite of these to maybe see on a big screen?
Well, I've yet to actually see Halloween on the big screen. I would love to see Halloween on a big screen. That's my favorite horror movie, so that's what
okay.
I would pick.
Well, there you go. I would choose Evil Dead 2, I suppose, if I was going to the movies, or The Thing.
That's a good pick, yeah.
I wouldn't choose The Exorcist. I don't think that would be that big of a deal to see in a theater because it's such an intimate type of movie. But Steve, how about you?
Well, yeah, I've seen The Thing and The Exorcist on the big screen.
Uh-huh.
Halloween, I don't give a shit about. I had the opportunity to see Evil Dead 2 at Flashback Weekend, and right. We were all tired, so we skipped it. Yeah. So I would go back and see Evil Dead 2.
Okay,
assuming that I don't get the option to just see Exorcist or The Thing again.
And last,
we should point out real quick. Man. Sorry, I don't mean to cut in.
No, I know. I know. What you're say
that this month we actually here in Lincoln, for any local Nebraska listeners, our local Marcus Theater is actually having Corey Feldman month. And I guess last week they showed Gremlins. This week they're showing The Goonies. Then they're showing next week Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and then they're having The Lost Boys this month for $5 at 10 o'clock on Thursdays. So I'm definitely gonna check out Goonies. And all 35mm prints of them as well. So
yeah, that's cool.
It sure is.
Yeah, and we were talking about I don't know what they do. I don't know how I hear about this. I mean, luckily Matt was looking at Movie Times and saw this. I think they, I don't know, maybe I'm just not looking in the right places. But I wish when cool things like this are happening, I wish the word would get out because I missed Gremlins last week when you could have gone.
I would have loved to seen Gremlins last week.
So yeah, that's a cool thing for us here in Lincoln. Moving on. What personality in the horror genre – or no, DJ, I neglected to ask you, I think. Which of those –
That's okay. You can just get me.
DJ says Halloween. What personality in the horror genre would you most like to meet in person, assuming you haven't already met them? For me, there were two I wanted to meet, Forrest J. Ackerman and Vincent Price. I had the good fortune to meet 4 years ago, and Vinny, of course, has passed on. This is from Night 64. I don't really want to meet anybody. Steve, how about you?
I mean, he's not exclusive to horror by any means, but I would like to meet Kurt Russell. I think I think I told Matt that he should be our for next year's Splat Academies, he should be our lifetime achievement guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Matt, how about you? Is there someone you just would enjoy meeting?
Oh, I would love to meet Quentin Tarantino and David Cronenberg. I would love to just sit down and talk low-budget movies with those guys.
Okay, yeah.
And pick their brains.
Cronenberg's a good pick. Yeah. Maybe a lot of people wouldn't say that. DJ?
I don't know. I'd have liked to meet Ed Wood. You know, that would have been kind of interesting conversation.
Yeah, sure. Living or dead. Who cares? no, I open it up. I have this really ooky thing. We'll talk about this in a minute. Horror conventions, movie conventions, celebrity conventions, they ook me out a little bit. I don't quite get it. I need to – it's a hang-up I've got where I'm like, I don't want to walk up to some famous person sitting behind a table and be like, hey, I enjoy you. I don't know. I need to figure out what's wrong, get over that mental hang-up of mine. So I'm not going to answer this because I just – I don't know. It's – I don't want to go meet anybody, I guess. It's a weird thing with me. But thank you for the question.
You're like me, Jeff, and you wait until they come up to me and ask me questions.
Yeah, like a boss. DJ the Mac, he knows. Now, moving on. Here we go. This is a question that we'll address in some form or another, but we'll talk about it briefly here. And maybe it's one of those things that you could spend as little or as much time saying basically the same amount of stuff about it. I like your opinions about file sharing. Not in general, but if your own movies suddenly started popping up on torrent sites, and I think this has happened actually, which is bizarre to me. It's sort of surreal. What if Outpost Doom or The Grand Horror popped up on the Pirate Bay? I think that has happened, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's already happened. You jerk.
No, wait, we should say no so people don't go looking for it.
No. No, that's never happened. My opinion is, I think it's wrong to download a movie that – content that is obviously made available for sale, you know, that the producers and owners of that content want you to pay money for in exchange for the use of it. I mean, that's wrong. It's wrong. Whether how bad I think it is if people do that from time to time, I think that's a different discussion, but I think it's wrong. Matt, what do you think?
I'm against it. Everybody knows what my opinions on this are.
Yeah.
It's pretty cut and dry. I don't think, like, obviously Outpost Doom has appeared on torrents already, and people have pointed it out to me. Multiple people actually have sent me links and said, hey, by the way, did you know your film's up there? I can do nothing about it. I mean, there's
yeah,
nothing.
It's hosted somewhere in, you know, Germany or...
Yeah, I mean, once the genie's out of the bottle, you're just sort of have to deal with it, and I don't like it. But there's really nothing I can do about it. There's no sense in just beating myself up over it or getting pissed off all day. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I don't like it. I wish it wouldn't happen, but there you go.
Yeah. So there you go. Steve, DJ, do you have any, like, you know, really blockbuster opinions about this that you want to share? Or, I mean, I think
it's actually kind of flattering.
An hour.
It's kind of flattering that someone would take the time to actually, you know, rip it and code it and put it online. Uh-huh. It's a little irritating to me that, you know, we make hardly any money at all. You know, obviously none of us have quit our day jobs. In fact, you know, we haven't even covered the expense of printing yet. So, you know, if you guys could wait until we get over that hurdle of, like, breaking even before you start stealing from us, that would make me feel a lot better about it than, you know, kicking us while we're still down and in the hole. And I think that's a good point, DJ,
because I think a lot of people don't realize, like, it costs a lot of money for us to be able to print up DVDs and to do all this stuff and, you know, put the money into the movies. And I know people, the argument for it is, oh, well, you should want your movies out there for free, so maybe by some chance someone will see it and it'll blow up. Well, the odds of that happening with a movie like Outpost Doom are pretty slim. So it's pretty annoying and aggravating when someone's like, I'm not going to – I mean, we price our movie at $10 with free shipping. I think that's reasonable. I would never charge $20 for, you know, Outpost Doom or anything like that. So I don't think that we're asking for a lot.
And we've actually made it available for even cheaper amounts on, like, Amazon and stuff, where you can get it for $5 as a digital download. So,
sure,
you know, it becomes an affordable option where it's not like an expense that we're
right.
Really
I think you guys are doing what you can. You know, the price point is right. I mean, I was laughing a lot about these screeners we got from a particular company the other day. Yeah, Matt got a bunch of these. I got a bunch of these. It became sort of a little joke. They kept sending them even after, you know. So, like, but I looked on their website and they're charging, you know, $20 plus $4 shipping. So almost $25 to get you this DVD. And the movie is utter rubbish. I won't lie to you about the relative quality of something like Outpost Doom, but I think when you charge $10 for it and it's a real DVD and a real package and everything, it's printed up nicely and it comes to you shipped for $10, I think that's right. And it's much more reasonable. And then DJ also offers for people who enjoy a different format, you can download it off Amazon for
and I would
for
have more
a low price.
I would have more respect for someone if someone, like a listener out there, was like, send us an email and was like, hey, I can get your movie for, you know, I don't want to spend the $10. I found your movie on a torrent site. Can I give you $5 for it instead to send me a movie? I would have more respect for someone who did that, and maybe we could negotiate a better price for you than just blatantly stealing it. So
let's not open the floodgates to negotiations.
Yeah,
because
you're just going to start getting a bunch of emails.
Handling a bunch of, like, bargain emails with people asking for, like, you know, you gave him $5,
that's
can I
awesome.
Get $4.99? Eat a dick, buddy.
I mean, it's a big topic and it's a narrow topic. I mean, in the briefest of terms, you can say, hey, it's wrong to do this. It's clearly wrong. And that can be the end of the topic.
Yeah, just then, admit you're a thief. There's nothing wrong with that. Just say, I steal things.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, if you want to, you know, go through all these contortions, I'll be happy to do that along with you because maybe I have some of those.
Well, if you're going
to
steal stuff, you know, steal it from people who have already, like, pocketed a bunch of money.
Can we move on? Mr. Conservative here who doesn't like rich people being taxed. Now you're just saying steal movies from richer people is what you're saying.
Right. So
that's
next
what
question.
I am saying, man.
Next question comes to us from Anakin Finch. He writes, Ha plus P equals question mark. I don't understand what that is. So I'm going to move on. Next question. I don't know if it's like internet.
Is that like a golden shower joke?
I don't know. Next
just
question.
Just the letter P?
Yeah, ha plus P. Is that a thing you recognize, Steve?
I don't know. I'm going to
Google
it.
Like happy?
Yeah, like happy. Like, I don't know. Steve, you research that. It's H-A-H.
Yeah, plus. That's coming up with absolutely nothing.
Okay.
That's bullshit. You're an idiot. Don't send us questions anymore.
Yeah. Moving on. More often involves someone doing something to someone. Something to someone else. What is the most horrific thing you've seen someone do to themselves? I guess they mean in real life. If I was saying on film, I would be like, man, I remember this short film I watched one time called Cutting Moments where, it's just a really gruesome scene of a person hurting themselves. And that would be in the running for me for the most horrific thing I've seen someone do to themselves in a film. In terms of real life, I remember one time we had this – this is a fun thing you can do on your message boards or whatever else. And it's called Picture Scavenger Hunt where you just say something like a monkey wearing a hat. And then a person has to go find a picture of that, you know, online and then post it. And like, oh, there's a picture of a monkey wearing a hat. And then the next person says, okay, I want to see, a banana with googly eyes. And then someone goes and finds a little picture of that. And you just go on and on. And then DJ comes on. I think it was DJ. He comes on and he says, a man with three arms. And then this guy we used to know named Ketchup, who's a cool guy. But I just lost touch with him. But he comes back, everyone's having a hard time finding a picture of a guy with three arms, a cartoon character, anything. So Ketchup comes back and he posts this photo of a guy with literally three human arms, his own two, and then his twin brother, his brother.
Surgically attached to his chest.
Yeah, surgically attached.
Surgically attached.
Removed and surgically attached his brother's arm to his chest. So his brother's only got one arm, and now he's got three arms. Obviously, he can't move this
one. And then he gave his brother two of his fingers.
Yeah,
so his brother has two middle alien fingers.
So they're like double long on the brother's hand. Obviously, he can't move this arm around on himself, but it's alive in terms that it's, not dead flesh hanging onto him. And I was just really sort of disturbed by that and how it came out of left field into this sort of lighthearted picture scavenger hunt thread. And I was like, wow. So they introduced to the world of extreme body modification where people do these bizarre things to their bodies. That sort of freaked me out and disturbed me a little bit. Steve, how about you? What's the grossest thing you've seen someone do to themselves?
Yeah, I got nothing to compete with that.
Yeah, it's pretty messy. Matt, DJ, do you have a take on this question?
Yeah, I watched a kid put his hand into an electric burner. Like on the stove, it was set to 7 and it was glowing red.
Ah.
He got angry and he's like, this was just like, I'm gonna fight the world by putting my hand on this.
That's
and
horrible.
I'm like, you're retarded.
Yeah.
And, the whole place smelled like burning flesh, and like the kid to this day still has like a tattoo, basically of circular kind of design on his palm of his hand because he's a retard.
Yeah, that's pretty messed up. Matt, do you have a take on this one?
Something crazy I've seen somebody do in person. Of course, internet shouldn't really count towards question. I think, but no, I generally stay away from those kinds of people. I have seen someone cut themselves, break a bottle and just cut their arm really deep before.
So, ew.
I guess that's sort of disturbing.
You've seen the inside of my arm a couple times, or my busted up feet when I got ran over by that car.
But you didn't do that to yourself.
Yeah, that was an accident.
Yeah, but I was involved in it. I was skateboarding and someone ran me over with a car.
Well, do you really want to get into some of the weird shit you've done, DJ?
Yeah, that could be a whole other show.
That'd be a brand new podcast.
We'll take
Life.
A break.
So, there we go. Next question. Says, horror is beginning to lose momentum and some of its strengths these days. It's been losing momentum and some of its strengths. What would you guys like to see in the genre that you feel may give it some new life and would make the common viewer more interested in wanting to see more? I want to see more stuff like the Wolfman remake. Remake Black Lagoon and all that shit in that style. That's what I want to see. Matt.
Yeah, I like period piece horror quite a bit. And actually, what's sort of weird is if you've been following the Deadlander.com blog post, we're working on a noir horror film this summer, and there's actually some noir horror projects seem to be bubbling to the surface. There's a TV show called 17th Precinct that's coming out that's sort of that way, and I'm looking forward to seeing some of that stuff too.
Cool. Steve, what would you like to see come and reinvigorate the genre?
Well, clearly we need more versus movies. I want to see Chucky versus Leprechaun, goddammit.
I can dig that.
10 years, and nobody gets in on it.
I can dig it.
I don't have a real answer for this.
Yeah. DJ, I mean, what do you think?
What?
Yeah. Next question. How many hamburgers do you think it would take to make up an entire cow? Well, I mean, we live in Nebraska. We're an ag-centric state. A cow weighs about 1,000 pounds. So I don't know how much of that is usable meat when you go and cull the cow. So, I mean, let's just say you know, a cow weighs 1,000 pounds. So, 60% of 1,000, 600 pounds. So 2,400 quarter-pound hamburgers.
Hold on, guys. I just Googled this. This is on answers.com. It says, how many hamburgers can be made with one cow?
Oh.
Answer, a normal steer that weighs 1,200 pounds will yield about 350 pounds of meat in steaks, roasts, etc. You could make ground beef out of all that or just the trimmings. If you use only the trimmings, then you would get about 75 pounds of ground beef. If each burger weighs 4 ounces, that is 300 burgers. It would be 1,200 burgers if you ground up the entire animal, as you would lose some weight to deboning roasts, etc. So
right,
300
so
to 1,200.
Okay.
Yeah, but what if you use the brain and the tongue and stuff? You
this
know,
is not a what if question.
Yeah, so there's your question answered. thank you very much for that. Here's a question. Without new iconic characters in the recent movies, do you think the slasher genre will disappear in upcoming years, or at least degrade to Saw knockoffs?
I hope so.
Instead of the Halloween or Friday the 13th formula. Like, okay, so we all know you have Michael Myers, you have Jason and Freddy. These guys are huge. These iconic guys. Who do we have now? I mean, they're making
a Scream 4. You got the Scream reboot coming, right?
Yeah,
so.
I mean, will there ever be another slasher villain in the same tier?
I wouldn't even consider Ghostface that, because Ghostface is a different person.
He's always a different guy.
It's basically the costume that's famous, not the actual person behind it.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't have an answer. I don't know if there'll ever be another Freddy. I don't think – I think our way of consuming movies and whatnot has changed a bit, so I don't think there's going to be. I mean, it'll just be it might be Freddy again, just remade, or Jason again, just remade. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess maybe it's not really a slasher film, but the most recent sort of big name, culturally known horror villain would be Jigsaw from the Saw movies. So I think it could happen. I just think that the 80s were such a neat time. Everything just happened in the 80s, and that was the big reason those characters got big, I think.
Yeah.
Just the time.
Then this one last question. I think this rings a bell. Did we answer this one already a couple weeks ago?
I'm looking at this right now. I think you asked me this in the chat room or something, or I posted it in the chat
room. So the question is, real briefly, I feel as if there isn't enough horror porn out there. Matt, would you ever consider directing adult films if given the opportunity? We've asked this in some capacity.
If I had the budget of Caligula and I had some good actors, absolutely. Yes.
Excellent.
I will remake Caligula. I will definitely do that.
Thank you very much for submitting those questions. It's formspring.me/deadlantern. You can ask us anything. Now moving on, before we talk about Caligula, one last thing. I went this past Saturday, I guess it was, and I went and saw Drive Angry, starring Nicolas Cage. This movie, I saw trailers. I think I saw trailers for it, and I was interested. I was like, oh, it's
awesome.
Some car action movie with Nick Cage, and it's in 3D. Cool. I'm gonna go check this out. I went a long time. I knew before I went to see it that there's this like genre supernatural element, but I went a long time just seeing like TV spots or something, and it did not come across me. I thought it was just a action movie or a car road movie, shoot 'em up type thing. It turns out that there's this supernatural bent to it, where the premise is Nicolas Cage was killed years ago. He was some sort of unsavory character, robbing people or whatnot, but he's dead and he's in hell. And then like years down the road, in hell, he's able to see like one of his, the way that they torture you is they show you the misfortune that your family is enduring alive on earth in your absence. So he knows that like his daughter, who he loves so dearly, has fallen in with a satanic cult, and she had a daughter of her own, a baby, and the cult killed her, and they're going to take this baby and sacrifice it in an effort to bring about open a portal and bring hell on earth, and all this wild sort of genre spooky stuff that I did not feel came across in the trailers. It's kind of interesting. So it was like just a bonus when I heard about all that stuff. I was like, oh really, that's what this is about? Sweet, that's all the better. So Nick Cage is so tough that he manages to steal a car in hell and drive it out of hell, because I guess you can do that. I mean, just go with it. So he's this badass, and he's driving around and tracking down this cult to save his granddaughter, because that's the last connection he has with his daughter, and he certainly doesn't want the Satanist to sacrifice the baby. I found this movie to be really enjoyable. I thought it was super fun. It was getting sort of negative reviews or middling reviews at best, and it did horrible business. I think this is, you know, now the worst 3D opening film of the recent years, the recent 3D resurgence, probably all time, I suppose. I don't know how much this cost, but it did not make very much money, and I'm sure it probably won't be around in the theaters too much longer. We didn't have it in the main. We have sort of a few different theaters, and sort of our main theater here in town quit showing it already. I don't know if they ever did. In favor of things like, you know, the Bieber 3D movie or the Romeo and Juliet 3D movie for kids and stuff. They need the 3D screens for those, because Drive Angry just isn't doing business. I found it very enjoyable. It's very comic booky, very silly. I mean, we talk about CG and how that looks and stuff. There's like CG stuff in this movie that's a little, I mean, cartoony is the word I'll use. I don't feel like it looked bad at all. But like, he's got this like magical gun that shoots magic bullets and stuff, and like, it looks like a cartoon.
That's
when he
it. I'm gonna
it.
Go see this. This sounds
this
awesome.
Is, by the same dude who directed the My Bloody Valentine remake.
Correct, Patrick Lussier.
Lussier.
So he's got some 3D credentials, I guess. The 3D in this was fine. There's some certain things that, like right at the beginning, like Nick Cage cocks his shotgun, and like the shell pops out and flies at your face. Like, oh, it's really cool. The movie's got silly parts. It's got bad parts. It's got stupid dialogue and, you know, just very hackneyed and whatnot. But I found it to be fun. If you like fun, stupid movies, I mean, it felt kind of throwback. I was listening to a Bloody Good Horror podcast today, and they talked about this movie and reviewed it. About half of them liked it and about half of them didn't, but they had some good things to say about it, so I'd encourage you to check them out. One thing they said was, and I've noticed this too, I sort of was going to mention the same thing, and I wanted to shout out to them because they said the same thing. There's this, like, I don't know, it's become sort of an internet meme to like hate on Nick Cage recently, to like, I don't know, hey, Nick Cage sucks, doesn't he? Yeah, I hate him so much. I think he's fine. I like Nick Cage, and I liked him in this. I think he's an enjoyable guy in these movies. So I'm 100% pro Drive Angry. I think it's one of the most fun times I've had at the movies in recent years. I probably like this more than Machete. I mean, if that's something that I can compare it to, sort of in the same type of genre. I didn't like Machete as much as other folks did, maybe, but I liked this more than Machete.
I think Nicolas Cage is awesome.
Even
in something like The Wicker Man, where he is so terrible in it, there's just so much entertainment factor from him.
The way he wakes.
Yeah.
I think Ghost Rider last night.
Yeah, awesome. Exactly. Ghost Rider. I would watch that like four or five
Ghost Rider
times.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that great, but I like it.
It's Nick Cage. He's
I think
Cage well,
I think
name.
It's unanimous. Splattercast, deadliner.com. Pro Nick Cage.
We are. Pro Nicolas Cage.
He's going to hate, but yeah. So I like Drive Angry. I mean, it's what do I want to say? I mean, it's not that great, but I mean, and there's definitely things that could have been done better, but it's fun. I enjoyed it. I it's disappointing to me that this doesn't do better business than it has, because I think it's every bit as much fun as Machete was to me. So there you go. I'm pro Drive Angry. Now moving on, Caligula. This is a movie that Matt feels is pretty interesting, and it is. As Matt was telling me about, I'm checking out the commentary now, and did you know this? Did you know this? This, that, and the other thing. All these things behind the scenes of the film Caligula make it an interesting film to talk about, maybe more so than to watch. I don't know. Matt, what do you want to say about Caligula?
Caligula is – it's one of those sort of like movies that's surrounded in myth. Like, no one really knows exactly what's going on. Like, I listened to I own the Caligula 3-disc DVD set, and they have a commentary tracks, one by Malcolm McDowell, one by Helen Mirren. And even they don't even agree on what happened. Like, Malcolm McDowell will say one thing happened, and the other commentary track, Helen Mirren will be like, well, this actually happened this way. And no one really knows what happened. But essentially what was going on is Gore Vidal, who's a very famous writer, he was going to make he wanted to make Caligula. And so Bob Guccione, the founder of Penthouse Magazine, was brought on board, so to speak, to fund this and provide the backing for it. And it, the idea was that he was just going to be the money man, and all these amazing actors were going to be in this big production of Caligula. So you have like Peter O'Toole, Malcolm McDowell, Helen Mirren, just all these great actors. And if you watch this movie, it's just amazing that all these really top-notch people are in it. All classy British actors. We all love the British actors. Mm-hmm. And so what ended up happening is various directors were, you know, at one point or another attached to the project. What ended up happening is Bob Guccione went and saw Salon Kitty. I don't know if anyone's ever seen Salon Kitty.
I'm unfamiliar with this.
Fucking horrible. Don't ever watch it. Anyway, it's sort of like this smutty Nazi-type film, Nazi-sploitation film. And Bob Guccione was like, I love this movie. I want the director for Caligula. And so that's how Tinto Brass came on board to Caligula. Now, Tinto Brass, of course, he's very – when I'm listening to commentary tracks, he didn't speak much English. So he was one of these directors that – he was Italian, I believe. He did a lot of sexploitation, softcore-type stuff. That's what his background was in film. And there's a really funny quote by that Malcolm McDowell and Helen Mirren both said about him. They said when they met him, the only language or only English he could really say with any determination was sex, food, cinema. Those are the only things worth in life is sex, food, and cinema. And so that was his whole theory on everything. And basically what ended up happening is they went into this production. They had just horrible things went wrong throughout the whole production. Bob Guccione thought that all the Roman women that they got off the streets to be extras were ugly, so he flew in penthouse pets. Then he basically ended up locking Tinto Brass out of the editing room, and he went and edited his own stuff. He filmed more footage of hardcore porn and inserted it into the movie. And, of course, this is the big actors like Peter O'Toole and Malcolm McDowell, they never assumed that they were going to be in a porno film. And so lots of lawsuits happened. People went on strike. I mean, it's just been one giant clusterfuck of a movie. So like 4 years later, after it was made, it was eventually released, limited, but it was a humongous success. But the ironic thing was it was sold out everywhere it played, but it could never play in enough theaters to make its money back. So it became this big, colossal failure monetarily. And that's sort of the quick backstory of Caligula. There's a ton of other stuff that I might mention as we go along. But one of you guys can take us through the plot of Caligula. What's it all about?
Well, basically, the movie opens with, and I'll get these guys' names wrong. The current emperor is Tiberius.
Yes. And
he's very old. He's 70 or 80 or something. He's about to die. And he's sort of at the end of his life. And his nephew or grandson is Caligula, played by Malcolm McDowell. And the movie makes me feel like Caligula is mad right from the outset, basically. I mean, he's just pretty much a bad dude, right? It's not like he took office and then went mad. I mean, he's just like evil from the beginning. And then this guy Tiberius is no peach either. Tiberius brings Caligula to this island or cave or somewhere where he's just sort of hanging out and just not really governing, just sort of swimming around with naked chicks. And he's sort of like, hey man, I don't know what, I'm going to die. You're going to be emperor. And then Caligula becomes emperor. He spends a million years, it feels like, just being like a douche to everybody, you know, killing people for his amusement, betraying people who were good to him, etc. Just being a dickhole. And then ultimately he is finally people get fed up after, you know, way, way, way a million years after they should have and take him out. And that's the movie.
Yeah.
I wish the movie was as short as your synopsis.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, and that's pretty much it. And the ironic thing about this is supposed to be sort of like a bio of Caligula's actual life. I'm not going to go into the backstory of like the Roman history of all this stuff, but for all intents and purposes, it's a genuinely fairly accurate portrayal of some of the stuff that actually went down. Gore Vidal, whose script was pretty much brutalized through most of the filming of this movie, he actually used a lot of the ancient Roman sources like Suetonius and stuff like that. And admittedly, a lot of those ancient
Suetonius?
Sources. Yeah, Suetonius, the 12 Caesars.
This sounds fictitious.
But anyway, those it's hard to say I agree with what these old ancient writers said, because a lot of them just wrote stuff to make their current emperors look good and stuff to, oh, make Caligula look like this horrible, horrible person. But based on the sources we have, the film is an okay representation of the story of Caligula. I'll go ahead and mention just a few things, notes that I got from the listening to the Malcolm McDowell commentary track. The first thing that Malcolm McDowell says when the dude's like, hey, okay, I'm here with Malcolm McDowell. Say hello, Malcolm. And he says, God help us, I play Caligula for my sins. So Malcolm McDowell right off the bat is, I guess, sort of he knows what to expect. And what's interesting about this, Malcolm McDowell had a really famous quote back in the 70s when this was coming out, and he was promoting other movies at the time. He said that he felt like he was raped by this movie. Like, he knew how it felt to be a woman who was raped when this movie came out, and, you know, Bob Guccione had done all this stuff to him. But now he's, like, totally cool with it. He appreciates what he tried to do, and he appreciates, like, the weird circumstances that came about because of this movie and all the stories and all this. So he's, like, actually fine with the movie now, which I thought was sort of strange. I wasn't expecting that.
Well, he's a lot more comical.
Oh, I mean, you're an old man. Right, I mean, you're an old man. Like, what good does it serve Malcolm McDowell to be bitter about Caligula? I guess,
and he says that too. He says that in his old age, he's just gotten calmer, and he's just cool with things that he is now. But at the time,
it was outrageous, I'm sure.
Yeah. Let's see, some interesting stories about this movie. Tinto Brass, every time a woman would come on set, he would tell them in his broken English, take your top off, show me your tits. So that was one thing that he could say in English that he learned.
In English.
many of the female extras had to actually have sex on camera with the producers of the Roman or the Italian producers of this film. They had to have sex on camera with them before they could even be cast in the film. So there's all this weird corruption and sex scandals going on around this film. It's like sort of politicization of it, which I thought was sort of interesting. So pretty much all the girls in this movie had to bang some skeezy Italian dude in order to get in it. Okay, this is going to be something that interests DJ. Tinto Brass used a four-camera setup, and on each camera, they had four zoom lenses. And he would place the cameras as far away as he could possibly put them from the actual actors doing the sets. So the actors would run through the entire scene never knowing if they were in a close-up or medium shot or long shot or anything like that. And so if you watch Caligula, you might have noticed there's zooms everywhere. Like, every other shot is a camera just zooming in on something. And that's just because they had to do that. Did the zooms bother you guys at all when you were watching it?
Well, I didn't notice it, I guess.
Really?
Yeah. My eyes were glazed over by the content of this movie. I wasn't going to notice something like that.
I mean, I noticed it, but I certainly wasn't taken aback. I didn't really care about it because the movie's so fucking boring anyways.
Well, it almost – there's some scenes where, like, somebody walks into an area and it's kind of, like, softly lit, and there's a bunch of people, like, naked in the background. And they're zooming in and out. It's like that really weird 70s style feel that kind of makes you.
It feels like a documentary. It feels like the Italian films had that little documentary feel where it's not.
I don't know if documentary is the term, but it, like, you know, today it reminds me of watching like an Austin Powers movie.
Yeah, okay. Oh, Helen Mirren's asshole story. I want to make sure I got this because this is funny. okay, so one of the stories that Malcolm McDowell said was that they're all sort of sitting around watching the dailies of Caligula. And the shot, because they were using these zoom lenses, it's very difficult a lot of times to make sure your shot is in focus. And so they were watching some of these dailies, and this was Peter O'Toole and Malcolm McDowell and Helen Mirren and John Gielgud is in this movie. He was there. They're all sitting there watching this. And they're watching this daily, and it was completely out of focus, but it was just this, like, dark hole. It was just all you see was darkness. And of course, all these British actors are making fun of this. Like, oh, this is a terrible shot. You guys completely screwed this up. And Tinto Brass is like, keep watching. and so the apparently, like, it came back where the cameraman got it in focus, and it was just a close-up of an asshole. And so they all started laughing, and then the cameraman zoomed out, and it was actually Helen Mirren's asshole. The cameraman had zoomed all the way in and got it in focus to use in the movie. And, of course, Helen Mirren is incredibly embarrassed because she's sitting here with all of her friends and coworkers watching this, and boom, there's her asshole on the daily. So she freaked out, and she got all pissed. And they actually had to convince – convince Tinto Brass to, like, sign a waiver in order to destroy the negative of this footage, because they thought if Bob Guccione got a hold of it somehow, he would stick it in the movie, and that would be that would be the end of Helen Mirren's career right there, Dame Helen Mirren. So somewhere out there, you know, someone's got the footage of Helen Mirren's asshole from Caligula.
Put that on the Criterion DVD.
Yeah, absolutely. Another funny story is the big fisting scene. We talked about this a little bit at the very beginning in the icebreaker question. Malcolm McDowell in the original script was just supposed to sodomize this guy, but that was a line Malcolm McDowell would not cross, as he did not want to sodomize this guy.
Seems pretty arbitrary.
Yeah, so he's like, but I will fist him. And that was actually Malcolm McDowell's idea. He's like, I will fist this guy. Well, the funny thing is they never told the actor about the script change. So the actor, this was his big scene. The actor invited his whole family, his mother, his father, his little sisters, his nieces, nephews to the set. And so they were all there watching, and Malcolm McDowell went up to Tinto Brass and he's like, have you told him what I'm going to be doing to him? And Tinto Brass just laughed and said, nope, we're going with it. And so this fisting scene took place in front of this guy's entire family, and he was apparently absolutely mortified. And he begged Malcolm McDowell not to put the little rose that he takes from the wreath that's around his head. Because if you haven't seen the movie, Malcolm McDowell slathers the guy's ass in, like, fat, and then he fists it. When he pulls out his hand, he takes a little flower off of the wreath around his head and sticks it, like, in the asshole. And the guy absolutely begged Malcolm McDowell not to do that. And Malcolm McDowell's like, oh, yeah, I won't do that. No problem, man. You're going through this shit. You don't have – I won't do it. And lo and behold, he did it. So there's Malcolm.
No wonder that guy's face is so shocked. You know, he really delivers it well. I thought he was just, in pain and uncomfort. But, you know, that takes it to the next level.
Yeah, his whole family was there watching, and everybody knew about it, and nobody told him. That was the kind of shit that was going on in this movie. The boat scene, there's a humongous boat later on where there's a big orgy where Caligula has ordered that the wives and daughters of all the senators have to basically become prostitutes and whores, and so there's a big sex scene on that. They actually built that boat, was the biggest prop in a movie ever built at the time, and they actually built it because I can't remember the guy's name. Danilo Donati, I think, is the guy who did the set designer. He actually worked with Fellini on Satyricon and whatnot. So if any of you have seen Satyricon, it looks very similar to Caligula in terms of the set design and whatnot. He actually hated Bob Guccione, and so they purposely built that boat as big as they possibly could in order to make it impossible to film. They wanted to make – you couldn't put cameras on it or anything like that, and so you could never get any scale of size. But Bob Guccione came in with a bunch of penthouse pets and thought it was the most amazing thing he had ever seen. And then he was apparently very pissed off that you couldn't actually really see it in the movie. Did you guys ever even notice the boat?
No, I don't even realize that was a boat, I guess.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing because
mission accomplished.
It was apparently the most famous, like, they actually put real solid gold all over it. I mean, that's how decadent the budget was for Caligula. I mean, they made everything just as crazy as they possibly could. And then the actual crew was like, we're going to make it so big. It's basically a giant fuck you to Bob Guccione that we wasted your money because we won't even show this great boat. All the extras that were in that scene actually went on strike for like 2 weeks, and Bob Guccione locked them in the studio, wouldn't let them out because they weren't getting paid, and they wouldn't keep working without getting paid. And he's like, well, fuck you, I'm not leaving, or I'm not letting you guys outside. And so they were basically sitting in there starving. And so Bob Guccione just finally decided to, like, pay them.
It's awesome. Shit. This guy is classic.
Oh, yeah. One of the penthouse pets, her name was Ananka. She eventually sued Bob Guccione because she wanted to be an actress. She was hell-bent on being an actress. And so if you look at her, she in just about every single shot that Malcolm McDowell is in, she's in the background just grinning because she always wants – someone told her if you want to be in the movie, you got to be everywhere that Malcolm McDowell is because he's in like in every shot. And so she would always be around him. And what ended up happening is she got drunk on that boat. And she walked up to Malcolm McDowell, and Malcolm McDowell, he's like, I was trying my best to be absolutely professional during this. And that's the funny thing about this. All these, like, highbrow British actors were trying to be dead serious throughout this whole thing. And this penthouse pet named Anonka, she comes up to him right before they're about to shoot, and she's like, absolutely drunk off her ass, she says, quote, I'm going to suck your cock, you motherfucker. And then she hit him with a piece of the boat and just smacked him over the head with it. Malcolm McDowell was like, cut, cut, cut. You got to get this bitch off the set. Very pissed off. So they took her drunk off the set. She somehow got back onto it, got behind him again during another take, did the exact same thing to him, said the same thing. I'm going to suck your cock again, motherfucker. Then hit him again with this piece of the boat. Yeah, this is kind of crazy shit that was going on. Helen Mirren, her commentary track, just a few quick things. She said, quote, the filming was like being on an acid trip. She says there was good times, bad times, but it was a great, weird experience. She thinks, she actually claims that this is a good movie, and she thinks it's good, even though she also claims that she had never seen it until she was doing the audio commentary. So, shit. That's probably all I need to say about the backstory. There's tons more stories. I find this movie absolutely fascinating just for all the weird shit that happened around it. And even though you guys obviously thought the movie was pretty boring, I like the time period. I like the subject matter. So I wasn't really bored when I watched this. I'm actually a fan of Caligula. It would be something that I would recommend to fans of just weird cinema. Absolutely, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I watch this and I watch what I understand to be the uncut version because there are different versions. Like Netflix has this available for streaming. And if you look at the runtime of that, Steve, that's what you watch, right? And it's like, I don't know, 2 hours, something like that. The version I watched was like 2 hours, 35 minutes. I believe it to be the uncut version based on some of the content that was in there in terms of, you know, sex acts portrayed on film and whatnot. Man, I could not. I would never recommend this to anyone. I felt like it was so boring. I mean, all these things happen. There's activity occurring on screen all the time, and it's pretty extreme. I mean, naked women, sexual acts portrayed, violence, gore, etc. It's all going on. But I don't know. Somehow, the whole thing, the sum of the parts, I found it to be incredibly boring. I guess because I felt like nothing was happening. There's no like you're introduced to Caligula. He's basically a madman right off the bat.
He doesn't really have a good character arc.
Yeah, there's no arc to Caligula. You just watch him be evil, and I don't understand.
He's a shithead, and then he's emperor, and then he's a shithead, and then he gets killed.
I mean, there's nothing. There's no conflict here. There are people plotting and scheming against him a little bit, and I don't understand how ancient Rome was in those days. But the guy could just do whatever he wants. Things that are just blatantly terribly evil. The people who had in no way deserved it, like the guy who got fisted. He was a totally good dude who had nothing like that coming to him. So you just watch this and all these other Roman assholes just standing around letting it happen.
There's no one to really root for in this movie at all. There's no good character you can get behind and be like, okay, I'm looking forward to like, what is this person going to do? There's going to be a good outcome to this somehow. And there's really not.
finally they kill him and you're like, who cares? The one thing that I quote unquote liked about this movie, there's this one scene and it's just a pure like, ha ha, look at that. That was funny. There's this sequence where he's got this crazy contraption. It's this like giant mechanical wall.
Oh yeah.
That scoots along the ground with these giant like lawnmower blades out front. And so he's buried up his victims, criminals or like there's one dude who used to be his homie and he's just taking him out because he's a douche, buried up to their neck. And so this giant mechanical wall slides across the ground and these rotating blades chop off dudes' heads. And that was funny to see just as a spectacle. The movie is extravagant, as Matt said. I mean, it is very much a spectacle. And you're like,
the sets look amazing.
Yeah, I can't believe what I'm seeing. Wow, look at this. It's crazy. I mean, but – there's nothing. There's no there to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess in the end, it's a curious cinematic oddity. I mean, it's got, you know, a great writer, it's got great actors, it's got a great set designer. It doesn't really have a great director, but it's just one of these things. It's like something that you put all these good elements towards a film, and it just comes out as a complete and epic failure in every single respect. But I still like it. I still think there's worthwhile stuff in it. I like the whole history behind it. I think it's very interesting when you really get into it and listen to all the stories behind it. And I think it's worth checking out. So,
yeah,
Steve,
what
did you think?
Yeah.
You know, I completely on board with Jeff. I was so miserably bored by this movie. I mean, it's one thing. I'm absolutely sure that you're right in saying that it's got a, you know, great stories from behind the scenes and during filming, and the story behind it is got to be much more interesting than
the
movie
it'd be
itself.
Interesting to read like a coffee table book about this movie.
Yeah, I mean,
photos and yeah.
Yeah, I'd probably enjoy like a behind the scenes featurette, but just nothing happens in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can understand that. And I should point out that on the DVD there is a couple different documentaries about the making of this. There was a book that was written, I think, in the early 80s by like the first assistant director of Caligula, and he basically it was an expose of everything horrible that went on, especially by a lot of the Italians that were basically exploiting these young girls who were, you know, just wanted to be extras in this movie and stuff like that. So there is stuff out there for you to find. Of course, if you do read about it, it's going to be so interesting that you're going to want to see the movie for yourself. It's one of those movies you're just going to be like, okay, I watched it.
See, I went about it the wrong way. I should have read something or watched a behind-the-scenes movie and then checked out the movie. But just the movie on its own merits, I can't recommend it at all.
I'm surprised you got through it, Steve, because normally you just stop watching movies you find.
This is
2.5 hours long.
Yeah, I started doing other things like while I sat there and watched it. Definitely, like, you know, organized. Yeah.
What did you think of the porn inserts, Jeff? Because that was the big controversy.
I didn't see what the big deal was. I mean,
There's one major scene. There's like a lesbian scene.
Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe I've just seen too much by this time in my life where I've just like, this is tame. I understand what it is. I understand how they, you know, have to classify this content as triple X and certainly not, you know, something that goes in a R-rated theatrical release. But I don't know. I didn't feel like it served any purpose.
It's hard to describe, but like Malcolm McDowell tries to point out that in the 1970s, when this movie came out, this was like super shocking, especially when you get like famous actors, award-winning actors that are
I can understand that.
That was a big, you know, shocking aspect. But you look at it today, and it's like, man, it's really not that bad. And there's not a whole lot of porn in it,
right?
Relative to
not.
The running time, there's maybe 5 minutes total of porno footage in it. So, yeah, I think it's cool. Interesting oddity, cinematic oddity.
Yeah. So. The other thing I want to mention is that because I spent another 2 hours doing this, there's this – I don't even know where I heard about this, but there's a Joe D'Amato. Joe D'Amato is this Italian filmmaker who made all these crazy – he made Anthropophagus.
Yeah.
If you're listening to Blackfoot Lounge recently.
We just recorded the new Blackfoot Lounge, by the way. It should be up this week.
Yeah, so check out Blackfoot Lounge on deadlander.com. And he also made some other movies. Like, he made some straight triple X movies. He made these genre films, et cetera. He made films where the two are melded together in strange ways. So he made a movie called Caligula. I think the file or the way that I saw it, it was called, like, Caligula 2, The Untold Story from, like, 1981 or 1982. So I think he was just, like, as the Italians did sometimes, jumping on this other property and making a film of a similar name and cashing in a little bit. Very similar story. You have a guy playing Caligula. He's a douche. He becomes emperor. He's a douche to everybody. He eventually gets his comeuppance. Again, it's this mainly a straight movie, but then they have all these, like, they have a few porno inserts, one scene in particular. And again, just like this version, it's very tedious when they show these sex scenes and whatnot. All that said, I feel like the Joe D'Amato version, in terms of just being a film that tells a story of this guy's, you know, rise and fall, in to use those words, not so much a rise, but like, you know, he's here and then what happens to him. I think the Joe D'Amato version is better just as a movie. There's a couple characters that like actually do things. There's a little there's a few more things that happen, and I was gonna give my copy to Matt, but it was snowing and crappy out today, so I wasn't willing to go out in the weather over it. But eventually, I'll give Matt a copy, and he can take a look at this. I just feel like it was better. And then in the search for that movie, I accidentally found this other one, also called Caligula, but it's a straight porn film. I'll also give that to Matt. But
Guccione did make a straight porn film. I don't know if that was the one that you found, but he did make a straight porn film with the sets from Caligula as well as the costumes, because there's like 7,000 costumes used in Caligula.
Yeah, I mean, it's extravagant. Every extra is in this extravagant, opulent costuming. I mean, the production is amazing. It's noteworthy. The film, I feel, is just bored me to tears. But there you go. That's Caligula.
I could see that, definitely. Yeah.
So it is worth discussing. But yeah, there you go. I'm out of stuff to talk about. What do you guys have?
Did you want to run through?
Yeah. I forgot all about that. last week, of course, episode number 218 was the 4th annual Splatcademy Awards. We've got a lot of positive feedback about those. I think mega thanks to all our friends in the podcasting community who supplied presentations and whatnot and helped contribute to making that show cool. Please, if you haven't checked it out, that's probably one of the best podcasts that we put out every year now for 4 years. Check out the 4th annual Splatcademy Awards. And Matt has some statistics and some of the numbers that were crunched in order to come up with the winners. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that.
Yep, I'll go through this really quick. Couple of things before I get into the stats. I just want to mention the Terror Transmission guys pointed out that we did forget somebody in our In Memoriam segment.
Yeah.
And that was Jean Rouin, the French director, sexploitation director. We actually forgot him in there. So I do want to make it it always happens. We always say at the Academy Awards, they forget Corey Haim. It's just, you know, it's so hard to keep track of every single person died. It happens every once in a while, but we definitely want to give a shout out to him as well, In Memoriam segment. Sleepy Cast promo.
I remember Matt asking me my opinion on this. I was like,
yeah. I wanted to mention this quick, and I will splice this into the show because I will play it.
Because we love those guys.
Yeah, I will play it on this show because I do think it's appropriate we can play it here. If you listen to Splatcademy Awards already, you'll notice that the SleepyCast promo is very short. Well, it was actually much longer. and the issue was the entire shtick that they're talking about is essentially sexually molesting a little boy. In a bathroom.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
In a bathroom. And so it was something that I was like, I'm putting together the Splatcademy Awards. We, you know, we got classy people on. We got Dieter Laser on. You know, he's going to listen to Tiffany Shepis. And, you know, we have all these different podcasters. I didn't know if they wanted to be associated with something like that. And just, I mean, I'll take full responsibility for this. I just decided to cut that from the show. And I will play it right now.
Okay, so I'm sitting here. In the bathroom, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know how things go. I'm doing my best to avoid work.
So,
I'm sitting there in the toilet, you know. Someone comes into the other stall next to me.
I mean, I'm saying, one of these stalls, like, I mean, you got a good distance, or is this like one of the, like, Cracker Box stalls where, like,
their knees
are, like, almost pressed up against yours if the wall wasn't there.
There's a little bit. Okay. I'm in the handicap stall.
Oh, yeah, that's me. I'm the handicap stall stealer, too.
But in the next stall comes this little fucking kid in the next stall. And I didn't go into that stall also because there was no toilet paper.
Fucking.
And he's sitting there letting out the most, like...
this kid is fucking blowing it up.
Oh, man, FZR, you know what that does to me.
Yeah, right? Oh yeah.
You know what I'm just sitting there, it's like, this is so fucking hot. My dick was just so fucking hard.
I've been there before, man. That shit is hot. And he's a little kid, too, so it's like extra dirty. It's like so much fucking, ugh. You could break through that shit. That's just like press board, sir. You can come right to that other side.
I felt Catholic for a moment.
Yes, exactly.
And then the little kid reaches over when he's done, and he asks for if I have any toilet paper in his stall. And as I grab a roll of toilet paper and hand it towards him, our fingers touch for a moment. I thought my cock was going to explode.
Oh, my God. Dude. Why didn't you grab him and pull him under there, man? He's small. He would have fit. He would have slid right under, sir.
Yeah, I was at work. I didn't want to get
him. Yeah, true. You got to keep your job. Keep it up appearances, as they say.
We're going to prison, aren't we?
I think so. I think this is a punishable by law offense, I think, sir.
Wow.
Oh, shit.
The Real Sleepy Cast. Join Frank Zanzibarbos and his hetero life mate, me, Ronan, every week as we take you on a trip through the most debaucherous of internet memes and the worst pop culture has to offer at fzrandronan.com.
Seriously, we're that fucking dirty. We fuck little boys. No, just kidding. It's a podcast about fucking little boys.
At FCRnonan.com.
And we're back. Yeah. So there you go.
Well, there's... those guys will be thrilled because now they can put that feather in their cap and say we're too dirty for the Splattercast.
Exactly. They'll take it. So there you go. We of course go listen to Sleepycast. Absolutely. They're good friends over there. But now Splat Academy Award post up wrap up stuff from last week. I basically got some stats on the different categories and I'll let you know who came in second, what was close, and whatnot. We'll start with best audio drama. Of course, this is a new category put together by Julie from 19 Nocturne Boulevard. This was just basically a two-show race. It was between We're Alive and You've Got Dead on You. Both of them might be about zombies. I'm not sure. And We're Alive actually led for most of the voting, but then as time went on, You've Got Dead on You slowly overtook them. So it was those two shows got pretty much all the votes. Best documentary, Never Sleep Again, of course, dominated that, won it. American Grindhouse was a distant second. Best horror podcast. This is funny because we give a lot of shit to Drunken Zombie. We'll say this. Drunken Zombie was the only podcast that had double digits percentage-wise out of all 10. Bloody Good Horror was second, and Night of the Living Podcast was third. And so Drunken Zombie, whether it was Doiner, whether it was just their fans, I don't know. But they had far and away the most votes of any podcast in this category. Vault of Horror, top final girl for the best blog or website. That was a fairly close race. True Blood was second to Human Centipede in achievement in horror design. You'll notice that Human Centipede and Shutter Island, those two films cleaned up at the awards.
Yeah, sort of unexpected. I never saw Shutter Island like rocking these awards. I didn't feel like that was going to happen.
I didn't expect that either, but that's what the fans voted, so there you go. Best video game, obviously Undead Redemption blew the competition away. BioShock 2 was number 2 in that category. The second scariest scene or moment of the year was being surrounded by wolves and Frozen. Of course, Human Centipede won that. That was actually a fairly close race. What you'll notice is what happened in the voting is pretty much at the very beginning in most categories, one film or one scene or moment sort of took the lead, and it never relinquished it. So from very early on, you sort of got an idea, okay, these are the films that are going to win because they got a big enough lead that odds are you're just not going to have a huge influx of voters later on switching it. But there were a couple categories that did switch. One of those categories was Best Nota Low-Budget Indie, and Dark and Stormy Night and Run, Bitch, Run were tied for second place in that. But Dark and Stormy Night was actually ahead for a long time. I believe Low came back, ended up winning that. And I actually voted for Dark and Stormy Night for that because I thought that was the best. Mm-hmm. Scream Queen of the Year, super close category. Brianna Evigan, of course, pulled it out. That was sort of shocking to me. I didn't know there was that many Brianna Evigan fans. But she won by 10 votes. She beat Deora Baird and Tiffany Shepis, who tied for second place. So 10 votes separated us, Scream Queen of the Year. Best TV show, not even close, Walking Dead. Dexter came in second. Achievement in Breasts. This was our closest category this year. Christina Ricci actually led going into the final day, and then Kelly Brook.
That's funny.
She just pulled him out.
She's got a huge head, though.
Well, we're not. It's not achievement in head. It's achievement in breasts.
That's another category.
Best villain. Only a two-way race here. Dr. Hyder won, of course, from Human Centipede. John Lithgow's Trinity Killer was in the lead for the first portion of this, and then Dr. Hyder, the Human Centipede fans, basically stormed the gates and voted that one in as the winner. Best Screenplay, another very close category. For most of the voting, once again, Dark and Stormy Night was winning, and then it sort of fell to the back of the pack, and it was eventually passed by Low and Frozen. And that was something I was excited for when I first started seeing the vote tallies come in, because Dark and Stormy Night, I was like, wow, people actually saw this, and they're voting for it. That's very cool. But it just couldn't sustain this run of votes it was getting, which I found a little bit disappointing. I would have liked to have seen that film win something. Mm-hmm. Best foreign horror film, Wreck 2 was a distant second to Human Centipede. That wasn't very close. Achievement in Makeup, of course, was a blowout for The Walking Dead. But Rick Baker, who won the Academy Award, he did come in second place. He was the only other nominee in that category that got double digits percentage-wise. Shutter Island, of course, won Best Sound. Crazies was second. Best Visual Effects. Was a really close category. Actually, four out of the five nominees were in double digits, and they were only separated by no more than 5% between each one. Shutter Island won that. Splice came in second. Cinematography, Shutter Island, of course, doubled its next closest competitor, which was Let Me In. That was the second most. Of course, Dieter Laser and Chloe Moritz dominated the actor and actress categories. Best Director, Adam Green, beat Vincenzo Natali by 25 votes, so that was pretty close. And then, of course, Best Film. The top two vote-getters, of course, were Shutter Island and Human Centipede, the two films that sort of dominated the awards. I feel really bad for this. The lowest vote-getter in Best Film. You guys have any idea what that was?
Oh, no. Dark and Stormy Night?
It was The Wolfman.
Oh, The Wolfman. Okay.
The Wolfman got the lowest.
People don't like it.
People hate it, and they're all stupid.
I liked it.
The Wolfman was a good movie, but apparently horror fans just hated it this year, and it got the lowest votes of anything in the categories, I think. So there you go. There's your Splatcademy Award wrap-up. So.
Oh, that's cool. I think it's cool when you say like all these categories were the ones that were close. I think that's cool. It makes you feel like, oh, I guess we did a good job choosing nominees and whatnot. So that's cool. And it's okay for someone to run away with it. To like Dieter Wade might run away with the category. That's fine too.
Sometimes it just happens. You just know who's going to win.
Yeah. Okay. So excellent. Very good. I do enjoy doing those. And then the last thing I forgot to mention early on, we want to remind people that Horror Hound Weekend is coming up in Indianapolis in 2 or 3 weeks here, and we're planning to go to that. So if you are happening to go to plan on being there, look us up and we'll do something.
And Jeff, you are going, right? That's the big news.
The big plan is this: is that I am planning to go, I guess. So hopefully, unless something comes up, I am planning to go and have a good time. I'm excited to meet the Drunken Zombie guys and some of the other people who are going to be there from our internet friends from podcasting that I don't know in real life, but I'll get an opportunity to go and hang out with them a little bit. So I'm looking forward to that for sure.
Yeah. Oh, one last thing I wanted to mention. This is just something I just wanted to bring up real quick. Was that our Form Spring? We get a lot of questions every single week, and we appreciate all the people that have actually taking the time to submit questions for us to answer. But I thought a sort of like a cool thing we might be able to do is, since we are going to these various conventions over the next few months, we might run into some of the celebrities that happen to be attending these conventions. And from our past experience, DJ and I, of course, we know they just wander around all over. It's pretty easy just to run into a celebrity and say, hey, interview them or something of that nature. So I figured we got two major conventions coming up. We got Horror Hound and then Days of the Dead Con. Well, I think it'd be cool if the Splattercast listeners wanted to submit a question to a specific celebrity we might not ever meet them, but if we happen to meet them and have the opportunity, we'll ask them your question that you want answered from them. So I've picked a few celebrities from Horror Hound: Corey Feldman, Tom Atkins, Barbara Steele, or Tiffany Shepis. If you have a question you want asked to one of them, send them to our FormSpring account or splattercast@deadlander.com. We will pick the best one. We're not going to ask every single question.
Cool.
We'll pick the best one, and if we run into that person, we will ask them your question, maybe give them a special shout-out. We'll have them say your name or something like that as well along with it. And for Days of the Dead, it'll be Gary Busey, Edward Furlong, PJ Souls, or Tom Savini. So there you go. Submit a question, and if we like it, we will ask it, and maybe you'll get a cool video that we'll post on deadlander.com of a horror celebrity answering your question.
That would be cool. Tom Atkins, by the way, is in Drive Angry, has a small part.
So. Oh, cool. Cool.
Yeah. You see him in there, like he doesn't get top billing or anything. He just shows up, and you're like, oh, shit. Yeah, that's cool. So, yeah. All right. So, yeah, looking forward to Horror Hound Weekend for sure in Indianapolis. Hope to have a good time there. Splatcademy Awards. Thanks everyone for listening. And if you haven't checked that out, check it out. It's fun to listen to. It's a much better way to spend your 2.5 hours than watching Caligula. I'm going to come down on that side of things for sure. But Caligula is also interesting in its own way, especially if you can get a hold of some of these commentaries or extras or outtake type things. That makes it much more interesting, in my opinion. So it's worth pursuing on that level. This has been deadlander.com's world famous Splattercast, episode number 219. I'm out of stuff to talk about. DJ, take us out.
Thanks for listening to another exciting episode of deadlander.com's world famous Splattercast, where Fist or Wiener, Jeff's going to suck your cock and bang you over the head.
Films of Harmony Korine next week.
Oh, yeah. Excited.
I feel the funk back!
Right to obey, and that's the right to kill.